Hello and welcome to the Business of Sustainability podcast, the latest show in partnership with Future Plus and City AM. My name is Mike Penrose and I'm joined by my co-host and fellow founder of Future Plus, Alex Smith. Powered by data and guided by human expertise, Future Plus is an award-winning sustainability and ESG management and reporting platform that empowers companies, investors and asset managers of all size to understand, measure, evidence, improve and report on their sustainability and impact goals. If you'd like to find out more about Future Plus, please listen to the details at the end of the podcast. I'm delighted to introduce today's guest for this show, Matt Bullivant, Director of ESG Strategy at Oak North Bank. Matt, thanks for joining us. And before we get started, just give us a little bit of background on you and Oak North Bank.
Great to be here. Thanks, Mike. This is great. So, I'm Head of Sustainability and ESG at Oak North. I've been at Oak North for around about 3 years now. And I've led sustainability and ESG in mid-sized financial services firms for coming up on a decade now. So I've seen the good, the bad, the ugly, what's worked, what hasn't worked, and so on and so forth.
In from the beginning.
So in from the early days. Oak North, we're a commercial lender, and we serve predominantly growth businesses, which for us means those entrepreneurs, those larger SMEs that are well established now but struggle to get finance from mainstream lenders. And that is our target area, and those are the sort of businesses that we do everything we can to support.
In this episode, we'll be discussing sustainability and what its value is to SMEs, as well as exploring a little bit your work experience and how Oak North manages to navigate this fairly difficult field. But Alex, for the first question, I'll hand over to you.
Brilliant, and lovely to speak to you today, Matt. So Oak North was a very innovative bank in what it's doing and how it's looking at sustainability by all accounts. It'd be great to understand a little bit more about that. But one of the things you pioneered was carbon neutrality around Scope 1 and Scope 2. Can you run us through some of the other strategies and the accomplishments and what brought you to that point? And then what is the plan for moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Scope 1 and 2 carbon neutrality was a really good signal of intent. And 2019 was a terrifyingly long time ago now, actually. You know, we're talking 5 years. So
it was
pre-pandemic, exactly.
So the before times, as we call it.
Indeed. And I think the reason that it's really important to set out that signal of intent is for all financial services firms, everybody knows that the real impact that they have is on the customers, the financing activity, the lending, the investing that they do. And that huge portfolio of impact is where materially they can really drive a difference. Mm-hmm. However, it's quite difficult to turn around to all of your customers and start pushing the agenda in terms of being more sustainable and striving towards carbon neutrality if you haven't got your own house in order. Mm-hmm. So it is material in the sense of it is the right signal of intent. It's the right thing to do to set ourselves up in that direction to begin with. So where we've kind of evolved from that is to tackle where we do have that impact around our full what is known as Scope 3 carbon emissions, and that is all of the carbon emissions of our financing activity as well as our supply chain and our operations beyond the Scope 1 and 2 of fundamentally our power and electricity use in the offices. Mm-hmm. So what we've gone out with, and this is one of the things that we did when I joined 3 years ago, was to set out a net zero target for everything we do, including everything we finance. And we decided, as a bank that is unencumbered with legacy fossil fuel books or heavy carbon emitting industries, we are only a 9-year-old bank, the nature of where we are and our capabilities, we thought we had almost a duty to be more ambitious. So we set 2035 as that net zero target. And within that, we've got some milestones along the way. One is to decarbonize our loan book by 60% by 2030. And another is to have our UK supply chain net zero by 2028. And that falls again in part of that sort of signal of intent to make sure that our own operations are really driving things in the right direction so that we can have those meaningful conversations with our customers and clients. So that's the roadmap, that's the scale of the ambition, and a lot of what we've done to date is actually making sure that anything we disclose and report externally has as much transparency and visibility as possible over the challenge and how we're going about things. So our inaugural TCFD report was released a year and a half ago now that sets out a lot of that sort of strategy and how we think about climate and sustainability, both in terms of that commercial strategy, our ambition, and also a lot of our capabilities, which we can talk around in terms of managing climate risk and thinking about things internally in terms of how we actually write business.
Going back to something you were saying earlier about the people you work with, where we find it's a really interesting phase for SMEs when you are, you know, you're probably a few years into your early stage VC financing, but you're not quite at that level yet where the big private equity firms are willing to give you any money. And it becomes that sort of hole where so many people fall into it. When you're a founder, the push, and that's sort of where Alex and I are, when you're a founder, the push and pull of, you know, you've probably got a couple of VCs eyeing an exit in a year. You've got people saying, right, where are your returns? What's the financial position? What we find within organisations is then that tends to sometimes shift sustainability to the back seat as opposed to being on the front seat. All the good intentions at the very beginning when you're doing every beauty parade in terms of trying to get money and getting loans means that is difficult to then focus on the values you started out with. How do you find we can, or how do you think SMEs can reposition sustainability as a front seat issue that drives value that ultimately relates to the bottom line?
It is a fundamental reframing of how we think about sustainability. And that is because it has come from a position of being a nice to have or an additive. And when you're coming at it from that point of view, when times get tough or when the commercials come into play and there is a cost, you end up with the additive nice to haves getting pushed onto the back seat. But I think the reframing is all around the fact that we are now in a world where this is a fundamental value driver to business over the long term. And that, I think, takes a little bit of time to get embedded and understood. And I think one of the challenges around it, and one of the challenges we encounter in the financial industry, is that we have this habit of taking a backward-looking view of performance, of impact, of risk, and all of those sort of elements, which from an Oak North point of view is actually not where we start because of the nature of those businesses that we're looking at. We're actually interested in the future prospects of those businesses. Mm-hmm. If we are going to lend to them, I mean, in a cold calculating fashion, we'd quite like our money back. And that's kind of a forward-looking view. So given that a lot of these businesses are relatively young, they don't necessarily have a 10-year credit history, they might have a complex structure because they're doing something slightly different, that tends to put them in a bucket of either difficult to finance if you're a mainstream lender, but it also means that sustainability is not something that has been well established either. Those two things come together, and they come together for us because we use our own proprietary software, our Oak North Credit Intelligence Suite, to take a forward-looking view of the creditworthiness of those businesses over time. And that means we consider all of the future levers that might impact that business in terms of its future capex, in terms of its future profitability. Sustainability, climate change, they are fundamental drivers of the future viability of those businesses and what will impact the value of those businesses. That's not to say that it is some beacon above all others. It is part of that ecosystem of things that you think about when you value a business, like innovation, like growth, like profitability. Sustainability is just one of those building blocks that makes for a good business model over time. So from our point of view, that's how we integrate it, that's how we think about it, and it is almost an education piece and an awareness piece for SMEs to start thinking about that. Now, the real challenge is that I think it is a fundamental value driver, and I think part of the problem that's happened in terms of communication around things like climate change and sustainability is that it's very easy to talk about the cost. And everybody talks about the cost because it's here and now. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, there's probably plenty of sustainability professionals who would shoot me for saying there is a cost to sustainability. But if there weren't a cost, everybody would do it. And part of the challenge is overcoming the short-term hump of that cost in order to recognise that long-term value. And that long-term value is there. And in some senses, it's existential. It's not necessarily just that you're getting massive ROI from doing that. Sometimes it is just a license to operate over time. And if you don't get that sorted out now, then you're going to run into trouble. And part of our duty as a finance provider, as a partner to those businesses that we work with, is to have those conversations with our customers and clients around what will fundamentally impact their business over time. Yeah. And sustainability is one of those things.
I think it's interesting, the repositioning at the moment of sustainability, because if I mentioned in the last podcast, you know, in the 70s, all the businesses had accountants. Accountants were viewed as a cost centre. You know, you had to fulfil the obligation, but it cost you money. Nowadays, you've got CFOs. CFOs' fundamental role is to find efficiency in the business, impact on the bottom line, improve profitability. They sit at the right hand of the CEO. And we're thinking, and the reason we designed in Future Plus to have a forward-looking objective is exactly what you said there. When we can translate sustainability actions directly down to impact on the bottom line is when it shifts from being the nice to have to, or that you should have, or just a reputational risk, to being a fundamental part of risk management, all aspects of risk, of efficiency driving, of becoming a better business. And I think we're at the crux there. I don't know your feeling on that.
I think we probably are at a tipping point in terms of that awareness and conversation. I think it's happening more often. I think there are more and more live examples now of companies successfully integrating sustainability and reaping the benefits of doing so. And I think you need to see more and more. There's nothing more powerful than a case study to be able to point to one of your peers or another small business that's done this and to be able to kind of say, oh, hey, you know, actually, this does work. This isn't a gimmick. This isn't actually just something being imposed on me that I know will be a burden that I have to kind of endure, but that's the world we're in. There is actually a real positive here, and we can point to real-world examples rather than theoretical.
I think it's how you look at the lens of sustainability in a business as well, and what you're inputting and what you believe that to be. And we cover social, economic, diversity and inclusion, climate and environment. And if you can understand your business across those themes, you're, again, and looking at that future focused, you're moving your point of view into building a more resilient business over time. And as you're saying, the case studies are great, but also the warning signs as well. There's more reports that you can shake a stick at the moment around investment, sustainability-linked loans, but even M&A and the amount of M&A deals that aren't going through because there's too much risk sitting across those five themes, and businesses aren't reaping the rewards that they could do by viewing it slightly differently, I think, and building that into their businesses from the get-go, especially as they're scaling, because that is tricky, but we've seen businesses do it the other way around, and they've scaled and then they've retrofit, and it's really hard to do that because you're trying to report on poor data and the crap out, excuse my language, it really, really affects at that stage. Whereas if you're building that in and sort of growing that maturity over time, it's amazing how much easier we're finding people that are able to report and actually communicate what it is that they're doing within their credentials.
Yeah, I think there's no question that there is an opportunity there when you are a smaller entity, when you are a growing business, when you are building something, to build it right from the outset. Yeah. And I think those businesses that are much larger or well-established are struggling with sustainability because it is a fundamental change to a legacy embedded business model, operational model, that in some senses actually requires breaking that legacy model in order to make things sustainable. And that's a lot harder to go through. It's a lot more expensive to go through than if you set yourself up with that forward-looking long-term view in terms of bringing sustainability to the fore right from the outset.
I would say I think regulation coming in and an increasing pressure with regulation is highlighting that a very great deal. You probably read, as we do, all the chief sustainability officer forums where they're all complaining all the time that 80% of their job is reporting against sustainability and that it's really hard. I've said a few times, a joke I often use is actually reporting on sustainability is really easy if you're doing things sustainably because the data is there. If you're trying to retrofit unsustainable data to sustainability reporting in order to salvage your reputation, that's really hard. So I think if we can shift, and the future focus is something that shifting that away from reporting unsustainable data sustainably to actually making things more sustainable is the pivot we need to do. But how are you finding the increasing regulation or the new regulation from CSRD in Europe through to the changes in the UK? How are you finding that's impacting you and the SMEs that you support?
So we've talked a lot about the carrot. You need the stick as well.
Yeah.
And that's part of the role that regulation sets out in order to drive the minimum standard and to make sure that there is a rising tide that's carrying all ships, so to speak, in terms of getting sustainability on the agenda. I think as well, regulation serves a purpose in terms of a guiding tool because it is complicated. It is a challenging space to know how to go after. And I think we're almost reaching a stage of maturity with regulation where it's gone from perhaps a slightly scattergun, catch-all approach. And you see this a lot. If we look at different jurisdictions, the EU has been some way further ahead and has probably been one of those that's gone through that process now of thinking, we are worried about this. We are going to make you disclose so much that you have to have looked at this. And that's the kind of utility of doing this from their point of view. But it's had those unintended consequences now, as you illustrate there, where there's so much resource and time and effort put to disclosure that nobody's actually doing the work. And you reach a point where you're having to talk about all this and disclose all of this, but you may find yourself in a position where you've got nothing to talk about or disclose because all of your time and effort has been committed to reporting. Yeah. I think we have a slightly more luxurious position in the UK where we've been able to watch that happen. And I think actually the UK regulator has led on some things and watched on others to see where things work and things are more effective. And I think what we're starting to see is a great deal more industry engagement and a lot more tactical refinement around how the regulation should be. So if I look at the finance industry, for example, there's a lot happening now about saying, well, actually, you know what, we need some guidance and a framework around transition finance. There's a lot of, if we look at a lot of financial institutions, they may have a lot of stuff that's obviously dirty, a lot of stuff that's obviously green, the vast majority of stuff that's somewhere in the middle that you kind of need to know how far to go or not. And actually, one of those sort of perverse outcomes of driving towards reporting and shifting carbon emissions to the lowest possible is that you then focus on all of those low carbon businesses, but actually some of those that need the greatest help are those dirtier businesses. Yeah. But how do you do that and make sure that you're not just preserving the longevity of a dirty business or a dirty industry? That is where regulation comes in and comes to the fore in terms of saying, we are going to give you a license to do that within these particular tram lines. And this is the sort of guidance that you as a finance provider can point to say, we are not making this up. We are following an independent set of guideline and guidance to say this is how you should go about doing it. So I think there is that utility around regulation. I think from the point of view of customers, we need to make sure that we're talking about the right results and who things are impacting here. And the reason I say that is because you may get organizations who talk to their customers and say, we are doing this because the regulation says we have to. Well, okay, that's a stick, and that's a kind of, but it's in the imposition phase there. Mm-hmm. And nobody really likes things being imposed upon them. And I think it's to some extent misses the point. We as financial institutions may be caught by a lot more disclosure regulation and reporting on this sort of thing. That's for us. Ultimately, sustainability is something that is impacting our customers' businesses. And that is what we should be facilitating assistance with. Mm-hmm. Whether we have a greater degree of regulation in terms of what we report about that's kind of our problem rather than their problem. One thing that might happen, though, is that as some of these regulations come to the fore and start to shape and guide and inform the sort of financing frameworks and financial products that are out there, that may increase or refine some of the financial incentives or opportunities available to the sort of customers and clients that are out there, particularly in the SME space, who are desperate for those sort of support.
Two questions in one for you, going back to almost three, actually, I apologise now, but going back to sort of now expanding that out to your scope three and trying to look at what that looks like and become carbon neutral within your scope three, which is, I imagine, going to be quite a reasonable challenge. How are you finding that affects your investment decisions, and then what is the reaction from your consumers? So there's a bit of a three-part question there of, you've got this plan to do it, how has that changed what you do? And then how are people reacting to that? Are they coming in floods because that's what they're looking for, or are they finding it a bit of a challenge themselves?
So there's a mixture of things to a collection of questions there, I would say.
You've got a lot of room in there.
Yeah, I think one of the things that we have done for a long time now, certainly in terms of the climate side of things, of sustainability, is because we are able to take a forward-looking view of credit risk, because our own analytical capabilities, we have wrapped into that assessment of climate change over time. And part of our credit intelligence suite that we use in our lending decisions, a big part of that is actually assessing future climate risk. That's actually embedded in every single lending decision we make. So that means that we assess that for every piece of business that we write. That's quite a useful toolkit to start conversations. It's quite unusual and quite distinct for a bank to be doing that in terms of every piece of business. It's not just an annual stress test in isolation. It is actually part of the fundamentals in terms of how we assess future creditworthiness. So that's a good starting point in terms of how we put sustainability into our lending decisions at the early stage. I think in terms of how that evolves towards net zero, there's a couple of things that you kind of take different approaches with. One, you help the customers that you've got. Two, you look at the mix of customers you've got and you start talking to those businesses who are doing sustainable things and bringing them in. So we need to do both. And those two things don't necessarily work in isolation, because actually a lot of the work that we've been doing is bringing our customers together, both with each other and with tools and resources and solution providers, because at the end of the day, we can have these conversations with clients and we can advocate as much as we like, but they need more than just advocacy and they need more than just finance. They actually need to understand what it is they need to do, where they need to do that, how they might go about it, who are the solution providers. And at that point, once they've figured all that out, they might come to us and say, well, we need to pay for it now. You're our finance provider. Can we get some assistance with that, please? We, in order to facilitate this, need to take a bit of a role in trying to driving that forward. And that has a multifaceted effect, because in some respects, going back to that earlier point, if I can bring a customer into the mix who's already been through this and done it well and put them in a room with their peers, or we put a webinar together and we kind of share those thoughts and ideas, that really brings it to life to some of those customers in that particular sector. If I can bring a group of customers into a room with solutions providers who will help them decarbonize and actually do that matchmaking exercise, that helps them move forward. And yes, to some extent, it's self-serving, because if they decarbonize, then I decarbonize, and that's great. And that's an all kind of an all-encompassing thing. But I think there's an important role for financial firms to play in that convening power. And at the other end of that spectrum, I think there's a really important role for financial services to play in terms of policy advocacy. We're in a whole new world now in the last month in terms of change of administration. We've got a whole new government with a whole new remit. A lot of that is an opportunity to drive and advocate for large-scale policy change that unlocks some of the challenges that smaller businesses, that growth businesses, that particular sectors and industries might have. And I think financial services has a particularly key role to play in bringing that together and using its voice to articulate where the challenges are in order to facilitate that flow of capital where the need is for it.
I think within that voice, one of the most critical things, going back to what you were talking about with transition risk, but also taking a future focus and the fact that you have a proprietary tool that looks forward, exactly in the same way that we developed in Future Plus, we think the only tool that allows you to quantify intent. What we found is that changes the narrative into something positive. We found if you are exactly the same with legislation and translating it through to your investment decision making, if you only look backwards, then all the incentives are to fudge the data to look good. If you're allowing people to look forward and report on what they intend to do, all the incentives are towards being ambitious, which then focus towards growth and much better. And we found at the very beginning, I don't know if you found the same, if people go out and say, my business is good, or my business, as you would within finance, my business is perfect from a financial perspective, just as if my business is perfect from a sustainability perspective, as some of these sort of badges and stamps purport to represent, what happens is people are incentivized to scratch and scratch and look and try and find out, because nobody believes somebody's perfect. If people turn around and say, none of us are perfect, we're not, but we're far from perfect, but we know what we want to do and we have a plan to get there, and you know, our future look is X, Y, and Z, people tend to go, yeah, you know what, I trust you because you're being honest about what you're saying. Are you finding your use of your proprietary tool is shifting people's focus towards optimism and change as opposed to trying to fudge the data to look perfect so they get the next loan or they get their next investment?
I think there's a mixture of things in there. I completely agree with you. And I think one of the things that this requires is a degree of bravery.
Yeah.
Not just because that forward-looking view has that positivity behind it, but also because we need to be willing to talk about everything that we haven't yet done or that we don't yet have. And the reason I say that is because even if you are an incredibly sustainably minded, forward-thinking organization, you are probably incrementally along your journey towards net zero or towards becoming fully sustainable. In almost all cases. That means that's where the challenge is, but it's also where the opportunity is, to your point. And I think there is a real demand, and this comes through the regulation now as well, in terms of how that's evolving around transparency, authenticity, tackling things like greenwash. Can't have a sustainability conversation without mentioning the G word. So I think that is a way to navigate all of this, to take that forward-looking view, to be authentic about it and very transparent, not just about what you are doing, but everything that you haven't yet done and that you intend to achieve. You don't just leave that hanging out there as a, here's everything that we haven't done. It's here's what we're going to do about it. And that has multiple use cases. It might be in terms of accessing finance. It might be in terms of future growth prospects for your business. It might be to attract future customers. There's a whole smattering of things there that are really valuable. And I think as well, there is another tool there in terms of taking that forward-looking view that might be of the sort, do you want to be your industry's next blockbuster video?
Yeah.
Or do you want to be the next big thing in 5, 6, 7 years? Most companies that are growth businesses or are scaling businesses do not just want to stop where they are. They are looking to the future. They are looking for opportunities and ways to expand and grow and gather market share and increase profitability. It is really missing a trick not to have sustainability as part of that story.
I think that transparency and future focus on progress allows that flexibility within businesses as well, because actually, depending on the expectation, the precedent, the regulation, the innovation, if you've got that, we don't know, or we don't know, but we're going to plan to, it just allows businesses to be flexible and to work within their commercial models. And I think that goes back to the very first conversation we had around, it's got to work for the business. It's got to work for the economics of the business. It's got to allow it to drive it forward. And all of those good things that these scaling businesses want to do. But by having that future focus, you've just got total flexibility to actually improve where is most material and most important.
And I think that's a thing that puts a lot of small businesses off sustainability, is that it's vast. And I think there is almost a concern that you are expected to solve all of the world's problems. And the reality is that A, you're not going to be able to. B, there will be some organisations out there that are better at certain aspects of this than you are. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly going to be elements of it where you can drive the greatest impact, or that will have the greatest impact on you. And as long as you have got to grips with those, that is, to that materiality point, really where you can both drive impact and look after your own business. And to almost kind of pick a lane to start with as a growth business, as a smaller business, in terms of what matters most to you, to your key stakeholders, and to realise that that's okay. And that it doesn't mean that you don't care about all those other themes, doesn't mean that you haven't thought about all of those themes, but you figured out what matters most to you and where you can have the greatest impact.
And I think within that, one of the most important things to remember, and it's why, you know, I frequently rally against the more extreme cries for, you know, sustainability within certain intensive industries, is, you know, we look at climate, environment, diversity and inclusion, social and economic, and if we were to radically change, for example, for climate, the impact on the social would be horrendous. Unemployment would go through the roof. Poverty would... We've been in a long era in declining poverty. Poverty would go back up quite significantly. And I think exactly as you said, finding that balance of doing what you can within your industry, as long as your industry provides some service to humanity, is what's absolutely critical.
Yeah, and I think these sort of categorizations in terms of environmental or social, they help us actually talk about all of this because it's complicated, it's messy, and we really need to be able to bucket things up so that we know that we are talking about something in particular, but we shouldn't lose sight of the fact that all these things are connected.
Yeah.
You know, if you take something like the climate agenda, if we don't bring everybody along with us, then it's never going to work. So it has a fundamental social consideration to it.
Absolutely.
But if you try and talk about climate and social in one whole holistic thing and figure out what it is that you're meant to be doing, then you just get lost very, very quickly.
Exactly.
And it isn't precise enough in order to actually drive meaningful change. You've got to pick something and go for it. And I think that's a lesson for those starting out in this space, is to really kind of hone in on what it is that makes the most impact and difference for you. And I think we see the same thing with things like the UN Sustainability Development Goals, the SDGs. There are lots of them. There are 17, and there are even more subsets to each one of those. And companies trying to kind of grips with all of them, especially when they're small, it's a nonsense.
Yeah.
They really need to know what it is that is the impact area for them and to properly go after that. But that's a real differentiator if you get it right.
Amazing. Matt, thank you so much. It's been such an interesting conversation, and thank you for joining us today. But unfortunately, that is all we have time for. If you'd like to join the conversation, please leave a comment or question in the comments section or email us at info@future-plus.co.uk. And please remember to hit the subscribe button for future episodes. And if you'd like to find out more about Future Plus or Oak North, please visit the links in the description. Thank you ever so much.
Thanks.
Thank you.